Welcome to Friends and Fables, an interview series on our podcast where we chat with friends new and old about TTRPG and everything in between. I'm your host, Tanner Azanero, and today I'm joined by a prolific actual play performer who you may know from series like Beyond the Brook, The Night Crew, where our guest DM'd for the Tabletop Jocks, Perseveroth, Matt Mercer, The Strix. They're an incredible game designer. They've made such cool little RPGs like Total Competition Island. On top of this, being an amazing photographer, musician, there's literally nothing they can't do. Welcome to the show, the Black Girl Mage, aka Lexi McQueen. Hello, my friend.
Oh my god, what an intro. I'm sure you get that a lot. That intro was awesome.
I'm so glad to hear we have to roll out the red carpet again. This has been an interview a year in the making.
Absolutely. The energy that's here has been 365 days and more.
Yes.
Truly, yes. Building up.
Yes, we tried to do this interview a year ago and then our schedules didn't line up, and then it's my fault because my ADHD brain stopped doing all interviews after that. My brain was like, oh, we lost consistency, it's over. We've completely lost all momentum to keep doing interviews, but we're so back.
We're so back.
Happy to have you on. How have you been? How was your Gen Con? It was so nice to see you again there.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been doing pretty good. It has been such a wild ride since Gen Con. This Gen Con was probably the tightest Gen Con I've ever had, in the sense of, like, I knew exactly where I needed to be. I had something to do every single day. And last year, I feel like I was kind of ambling and like wandering around and stuff, and it was a little bit more chaotic. And this year I was like, nope, I've got to be here by this time. And it was such an awesome experience. I'm still reeling from being around so many people that I like know and love and adore and enjoy, and just being able to be like, my entire weekend is this, just loving people, hanging out with people, showing people love for their work and respecting them and like doing all of that kind of fun stuff. And then having to come home and be like, nobody really knows. It's like the standing in the corner of the party meme where it's like, nobody knows that I love my friends.
Yes. I cannot tell you how much I relate to you.
Yeah.
Especially on my end, at least, coming home to like a quote unquote normal job after doing everything that we did at Gen Con.
Truly same.
That's so fun. Ours was a similar experience in that last year was our first. So we did way too much. We had like 6 events a day and panels like hour to hour, but they were across the other side of fucking downtown from one another. Just awful. And then this year we were like, we're doing like 2 to maybe 3 things a day and calling it.
3 if we're nasty.
Yes, straight up 3 if we're nasty. And we were not nasty most of the days.
We love to see it.
Yes, it was very fun. Well, I'm glad you had such a good time. It's funny because I, on a whim, where we ran into each other was on a whim, I decided to do that Blood in the Clock Tower event that Becca was running.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize until I got there that you were one of the storytellers, which is so fun. How did you get into Clock Tower? And I love that's like a new obsession of mine, that game.
Yeah.
How did you get into that game?
Oh my god, I have these awesome friends who are like awesome game developers, and every single year we used to meet up at this convention, and every single year I would just like show up, and they would bring new games for us to try. And the first year that I met them, we played Alice is Missing. Ooh. And then we played Blood on the Clock Tower the following night, and I think we played from it was a bunch of tabletop nerds, so we're acting, we're like going out, we're like talking, we're doing our accents, we're like really building out our characters and stuff, and then at night having these really spirited conversations about like who's gonna die. And I think we started playing at like 10 p.m. We didn't finish playing till like 2 or 3 in the morning. It was that long of a game. But I got in there. I was a player for that game, and on the way, like literally on the flight home, I was like, I need to figure out how to buy this game because I want to run this for other people, which is how I approach every single game.
I relate to that. Yeah,
you get it. Yeah, I think that was probably about 2022, maybe. I think it was 2022 or 2023. But I had the time of my life playing it, and then I tried to run it a couple of times. It took like 3 months to actually get to me, so I was just like fiending for like more content. But yeah, now it's kind of just one of those things where I just watch as many games as I possibly can, and every once in a while I try to get my friends together to play, but it usually caps at like six people, which is fine for a game Blood on the Clock Tower, but it's quick for sure.
I love Teensyville games, but they do go a little quick. We just recently, because of my obsession with this now, have started doing Clock Tower series for the show.
Yes.
So, and also like on or off screen, if you ever want to play, I like straight up, if you need someone, I will do it.
I'm so in.
Whenever, and I will come to you, or you can come to me. I'm
always running games. There's this like video from, I had a going away party for when I moved, and in one room I had the friends who didn't want to play this game, so they were doing karaoke and they're like singing like staring at the blank page before, you know, whatever. I like run from that room into the next room, and it's like 12 people sitting in a circle being like, and if you're the drunk, then you've been lying this entire time, even if you didn't know it. Like, everybody's so spirited. And I'm like, this is how I want it to be. This is the epitome of my life.
Oh, that's such wonderful chaos. I love that so much. That is fantastic. Well, it was a great time. You did great. You were my storyteller for that like very strange three-part game. I really fucked everybody over real bad. I didn't mean to, but I was drunk. I was the drunk, speaking of, and not only was I the drunk, whose decision was it to make the fortune teller the drunk in that game? That's rude as hell to make the most powerful townsfolk in the script the drunk. Was so mean.
That was a very fun thing that we got to do, where the first time that we went through the game, we all chose the same things. So the second time we were like, Becca was like, oh, we can just choose. It doesn't have to be the same as long as it makes sense with like everything else that's going on. So that was purely my brainchild, and I'm so sorry.
Oh no, that's okay. But I loved it. But also it's because I got the fortune teller and I was like, I need to lock in and not die. And then I kept staying alive, and I was like, something's got to be wrong. I've had this figured out for days. Something must be wrong. So that was me screwing over my team in that way. But that's what makes a good storyteller. So kind of jump into the wonderful things that you've done in the space and everything, you kind of, as I talked about in the intro, you've accomplished sort of what I would call a jack of all trades approach to artistic expression in general. And it seems like TTRPG is sort of the stained glass centerpiece of the cathedral of creativity that you sort of exist within. What is the moment that kind of cemented this foundation that storytelling now rests within upon your life?
I would say, because I started off playing D&D like a lot of people do. I think that there was a moment in the first game I ever played in. It was like a Curse of Strahd game. I didn't know it was Curse of Strahd, but this guy just signed on to like run it for me and a bunch of his friends. And I was friends with his sister, so I just like sat at the table. We got maybe one session in before there were like truly just two people that were like, we're going to go after some wolves. We don't care if the rest of the party joins us, but whatever. And we got pulled into it, and our character, like full TPK, first session, whatever. And then we could not schedule a second session. And I remember being so angry, being like, I could have done that better. And that's nothing to say against anyone's like storytelling abilities, but I think that was a very similar thing to that like Blood on the Clock Tower moment, where I just saw myself as the person telling the story and not just the person playing the story. And I went out and bought like a DM's guide immediately. So I feel like that was the cement of it all. I think that truly was my calling, my moment where I realized like, oh, this is something I really, really want to do. I think it wasn't until, oh gosh, I went to go see NADPOD live in Chicago. I drove. It was the coldest day of the year. It's ice outside, snow outside. And I went and me and my friend sat in the stadium, or not sat in the stadium. Me and my friend sat in this like beautiful theater that they were having their show in, and we had listened to the whole show so far. And I wrote out a little note to myself. I was just having this like weird buzzing magic feeling, like both in my chest, almost like a pulling at the back of my neck. And I was like, I gotta do this. And I wrote a note to myself and I was like, this is what you want to do. Like, this is really it for you. Like, this performance, this storytelling, it's theater, it's acting, it's everything you want to do rolled up into one. And that was the exact moment that I was like, oh, I know what I want to do in this space. So that wasn't the moment that I actually entered the space, but it was the moment when I realized like it was much bigger than just like me sitting at home telling stories with the buds, you know?
Yeah, that's so rad. What then, I guess, to jump off from that, what's then maybe the next bullet point where it goes from passion cemented to kind of career cemented, for lack of a better terminology?
Yeah. Well, I made a Twitter. I made a Twitter that was separate from my original like account. And I worked with someone who was like, I do branding, would love to work with BIPOC people to like kind of cement their branding. And I was like, I don't even know what I want to do, but like, let me just reach out to this person. And we had an idea. My original branding pitch, wild. It's actually wildly different than where I'm at right now.
Okay.
I was going to be doing like a Bard radio station thing. And that was an idea I had for a little bit. And then I came to Black Girl Mage, but made Twitter and then tweeted a little bit, but there was this moment where I had said something about like, I want to run a Schitt's Creek game, elves who have their kingdom overturned by their elven accountant and they have to go to a local town that they own technically and do all of these tiny quests. And tons of people like responded to that. And then I was getting DMs about people, like I was getting DMs from people saying like, would love to play in this if you're running it, would love to like have you in a game of mine, whatever. And that's also kind of what put me on the map to start doing like charity games with people and to find some of the original communities that I kind of stumbled into just straight out of the gate, was me saying kind of like, I want to make this kind of game. And then other people who already had the intentions and had the ability to make actual play happen found me and were like, you should do this. How can we make this happen? And I was like, oh, this is way more serious than I thought. Wow. I guess I gotta sit here and take some notes.
Wow. That's so fun for it to be kind of an experience where you don't even realize that the train is off and going before the cart that you're on starts moving with it.
Yep, exactly.
Well, that's so cool. You've talked about in previous interviews kind of this passion that sort of erupted in you, the importance of drawing from your own life and experiences when world building and storytelling. As this kind of radical self-inspiration breathes life into the stories you tell, how has that kind of inadvertent self-reflection breathed new life and understanding back into you from the stories that you've told in these games and shows?
Ooh, that's a good one. I mean, I think that one, the biggest thing is I've become funnier.
yep, that's exactly, that's what we do it for.
Exactly.
That's what we do it for, to be more interesting at social gatherings.
Exactly.
For one person who you meet one time to be like, that guy was pretty funny.
Exactly. That's literally it. Like, I feel like I've gotten funnier. I've actually felt more hope. I feel like when I was younger, I got into college and stuff, I was a very hopeful, like very big dreamer, very like heroes always win, sky high, you know, kind of kid where I was just like, oh, the heroes are always going to do what's right and they're always going to win and there's no villains. And then 2020 happened and 2016, whatever, not 2020, 2016 happened. Mm-hmm. And that was my first year of college. And I remember walking around with this grave feeling of like, oh, heroes don't always win, and actually I have no idea what a hero looks like, what is good and what is bad, and I had to like sit down with myself. And ever since running these stories, like running these little make-em-ups, you know, I feel like going into it, sowing the seeds of my own experience and having people come out and show me these like points of hope, these points of heroism, these points of like doing right despite the condition of evil existing. I feel like I have just garnered this new sense of hope. It's very odd. And I think that a lot of people don't know where it comes from, because I think in other people, it looks like naivety. It looks like, you know, that original gung-ho spirit of like, everything's going to go well and everything's going to turn out great. And it's like, no, it's just this bold spirit that as long as we are here and we know what love is and we know what loss is, we will choose love every time. Those people with good in their hearts will choose love every time. And there's more people out there with good in their hearts than bad. And I just feel like these stories, like I throw situations that I've gone through in real life and watch people react in the most miraculous of ways. And some of them are similar to me and some of them are not. And it truly teaches me so much about myself and teaches me so much about my reality and how I perceive things. So I feel like I've just grown as a human being in the sense of like how I consider the world and not looking at everything as like purely there are heroes and villains, but more so that there is evil in the world, but there are people with real supreme good in their hearts. And I can trust them and I can love them and I can sit in that space and feel like other people, I'm not the only person that, you know, is disappointed by evil. Yeah. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And especially too, when you think about the fact that joy in and of itself in the midst of everything is an act of revolution,
mm-hmm.
and being able to not even simulate's not the right word, but experience it in a different way through these stories that we tell, is just as valuable when sometimes it is tough to feel that tangibility of joy elsewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like something I harp on a lot when I talk to people, especially people who are outside of tabletop. I feel like I say something to them and I'm like, oh, it's this wonderful game where we are collaboratively creating a story and you get to be something that you might not be in real life. And it's fun. And they're like, oh, that sounds interesting. It seems like people would really like that. And I was like, or I'll be like, you don't even understand. Evil or grief or disappointment or sadness or any of these like negative feelings we inevitably will feel in our lives, if that is a sickness, then our vaccine is to make things up and play through those experiences and overcome them. Mm-hmm. It will build up our resistance to them so that it's not that we won't ever be disappointed. It's not that we leave our games being like, something terrible could happen to me right now and I would do nothing about it. But right. To simulate a character going through the same kind of grief or the same sort of disappointment that we go through in real life, and for them to overcome it or become stronger, even if that's a negative thing, and to see what that looks like, it kind of instills this like resistance to the true vileness, and like allows it to feel like you aren't going through a situation for the first time, which is a miracle within its own sense.
Right.
And when I tell people that, they're like, whoa, wait a second. And I'm like, yeah, I've been sitting on this one. I've been sitting on this one for a while.
Wow. Yeah. What a beautiful connection to this. Like it's so strange to think about tabletop specifically as modern day storytelling, like a pretty mm-hmm. modern day bare bones way back when, what, like thousands of years ago when people were just telling stories in caves and like,
yep.
just the strange parallel between what we do now with these tabletop games and like the just bare bones of human storytelling is so interesting. How little you truly need to experience these very healing moments and things in these games and stories. That's a really wonderful way to approach this space that we find ourselves in.
Yeah.
Is to move out of super deep emotional time.
Yeah.
Is there kind of, you've done a lot of various different stories and works and games over the years. Is there a point of inspiration that you've ever deemed as like something that's kind of out there or maybe strange that you haven't necessarily heard other people pull from for places of inspiration for the things that you create?
I don't know. I feel like I get my inspiration. I mean, I get a lot of them from my dreams.
Okay.
So like I have very vivid dreams. I'm one to build an entire setting or an entire one shot from a situation. So like if I can see, you know, oh, there's a night carnival and at the night carnival there's a rave full of people with headphones on and they're like having a silent disco and there's a ghost moving between them and causing them to like drop to the floor and nobody's noticing it because it's a silent disco and the last thing you see is like one final dancer in a room full of, you know, like that's a scene that I don't know where that comes from, but as soon as my brain is like, oh crap, that exists for me now I have to build a world around that, or I have to find a way for players to discover that along with me and feel it as horribly as I do. So I feel like it, and especially for me, I'm very bad at remembering references. That's like my one fatal flaw. It's like unless I rewatch a movie a billion times, even though I love so many different kinds of older movies and like movies I watched as a kid, someone could quote it to me and I'd be like, where's that from? And they're like, your literal favorite movie. I don't understand it.
We have the opposite issue where we will not shut up and stop referencing other things. So much so that on our show, I worry that we're going to reach a point where it's like us referencing movies and other stuff more than it is our own original content.
It's not a bad problem to have. I think it's good to have like cultural touch points. There have been times where someone has pointed something out to me and I will be like, they'll be like, oh, it's kind of like that scene in Coraline. And I'm like, you're right, it is kind of like that scene in Coraline. And I didn't notice that up until now. But I'm a big like fall asleep, go to bed, have a dream about something and then wake up and be like, oh, my players need to experience that. Or I mean, I really do like children's stories. I really do like any sort of story that takes a child seriously and says you can connect the dots, like Hunger Games, Spy Kids is honestly like this, like Avatar Last Airbender, anything where it's like, this would be scary, but you are so smart, you can figure this out. That's my favorite genre to sit in and to pull inspiration from, because I think it's, if that kind of stuff can take children seriously, it also would be scary for an adult to watch. It would also be scary for an adult to live through. Yeah. And I think in general, I just want my stories to not be like, I hope you're here with me. I hope you're paying attention. I'm snapping twice to make sure you're with me. Like, I don't want it to be like that. Yeah, I like any sort of story too, that like any sort of movie or media that takes kids more seriously than adults. That's also a big point of inspiration for me. Kids Next Door, once again, like Spy Kids, Shark Boy and Lava Girl, yeah, where it's like, it's got to be a kid's job, that kind of thing. I love ripping stuff from Spy Kids. Like, cool. It's my job.
That is such a cool subgenre that you have pointed out to me. Yeah, and a very interesting, especially also in the way that you've talked about how, like, what storytelling means to you, too. That sort of childlike wonder and that, like, childlike, like you said, some people might call it naivety, but I don't think it is. It's it's this like pre-world kind of giving you that first moment of adulthood where the world does truly give you more than you can handle. And before then, as a kid, you're like, I can do anything. And then like, but like that energy in the midst of a scary scenario is this sort of beautiful thing to believe in and go through a story with. So I love that. That's great. Is there, obviously different systems support different kinds of stories. So rather than asking you maybe a favorite system, unless you have one, maybe a better question would be, is there a system, a game system right now or in recent history that you've gravitated towards a lot with your style of storytelling?
Right now, it's going to be Daggerheart. I think there's something about the way environments are built, the way that adversaries are built, and the way that it's so story-driven, that really clicks with me, that makes me want to suggest it to anyone that I come in contact with. Even the other day, I was running a Rime of the Frostmaiden game, and it got to a point where I was like, unfortunately, players were coming up on like a scattering of these like tiny little mole holes. And they were like, I wonder what this is. And they're like, it doesn't matter. We're just going to go through it with our sled. And then a star nose mole, like this white star nose mole, peeks its head out of one. And then all of them start having these like huge moles burst out of them and reach towards the players. And it turned into an encounter where if I would have rolled initiative, it would have been annoying weirdly timed, because it's about the players reacting to what's going on rather than like my evil villain star nose moles getting a spotlight. And so I was literally like, I'm sorry, I'm gonna make y'all play Daggerheart for a second. You all tell me what you're gonna do, and the second that one of you fails to roll or doesn't hit or doesn't, like, you don't succeed, I'm gonna step in and have something do something to you. And it felt so natural, and I was like, this is my system of choice for right now. Yeah, that's a very, very good one.
Yeah, I know everyone's really fall. I haven't gotten to play it yet, and I want to play it so.
Oh, let me run it for you, Tanner. Let me run it for you.
I'd be so honored. Yes, 100%. Again, you tell me when and where, and I'll do whatever you want. I'll play any game. You're so talented. I'd be honored.
Please, yes. I would love to have you as a player. Oh my God, let's do it.
I'm so in. Yes, I kind of don't know how it works, but I was also there at Gen Con when you played with Matt and Spencer and Zach. That was such a fun game too.
That was awesome. Spencer's the one that introduced me to Blood on the Clock Tower. We played his game, Alice is Missing, the night before. I was going to
say, because he also made Alice is Missing.
Yeah, he was so sweet. It was like, we had just met at this con, and I was talking about storytelling and what it was to me, and he was sitting there and he was just waiting and like listening. And I could feel him listening rather than like partaking in the conversation, overtaking it or anything. And he kind of said to me, he was like, I have this game that I think you'll really want to play. And I had a recording that night, so I went to the recording, and he was literally like, I will not start this game without you. I think this is going to be your game. You're going to love this. I will wait. And I showed up a little bit late, and he still ran it for me, and he was like, don't worry, nobody, you know, and I got introduced to a bunch of people. We played together, and that has been the start of a very awesome friendship. But like, he is the reason I run games like as viscerally and as like, I like them immersed, even if they're like simple card games. I like them immersed because it's just every game should be an experience. So yeah, that was awesome. That was my first time getting to play as a player, as with him as my GM. So that was awesome.
Cool. Really cool. Well, what a dude. I got to get Spencer on the show now too.
Yeah. He's awesome.
Yeah. That show was really, really fun. And Daggerheart just sounds so awesome. I just want to play it. So
yeah, we got to get you in.
I'm so in. That's great. You kind of mentioned NADPOD. I wanted to ask if there was an actual play show that has kind of stuck with you in a deeper way. I know you're friends with a lot of these people, so I don't want to necessarily make you pick favorites, but is there a show that has kind of stuck with you in a way that's maybe different than other actual play shows have?
Yeah, it's going to be NADPOD all the way through. It's definitely, when I think about what got me into it, what got me into thinking about recorded actual plays in a more serious way, thinking about what's entertaining, thinking about what people actually sit and listen to, how to make a character that people actually like, how to make choices that are big swings and not like drawing away from the overall themes of a story, but still spotlighting other people, spotlighting myself, and also giving the GM or DM a layup. Like NADPOD has to be a textbook classic. I think I'm friends with a lot of people who make a lot of actual plays, but I would say NADPOD for podcast stuff, and then Transplanar for live stuff, like live actual play. There is just something happening at that table that is lightning in a bottle every single time Connie sits down with their players. And especially because I'm friends with like Connie and I'm friends with a lot of the people on that show, I truly feel like there is an overarching conversation happening about and a transition in the actual play community that has been sparked by these productions of like people being remote and still making these like intense epic plot lines that people sit down for every single week. And that's so inspiring, and it has stuck with me ever since I stumbled across it years ago.
NADPOD was what got me to play D&D for the first time. I knew about them from college humor stuff, and co-star Zach, who was with me at Gen Con. I actually don't know if you got to meet Zach.
I don't think we got to meet.
He wanted to run D&D during the pandemic, and so I was like, let me listen to this. I know Zach likes this show. And then like one episode in, I'm like, I'm in. I get it. Yep. I didn't realize this is what D&D was. I can't believe I haven't been playing this since I was 12. I can't believe all these wasted years where I wasn't playing tabletop games is insane. I relate very much to you there. Transplanar is great.
Oh my God. Transplanar helped me with actual play stuff. NADPOD helped my literal home game. Like, I realized there were so many things, and I know that Murph was also figuring out a whole lot of stuff during that, but I was like actively changing the world of my home game because I was like, oh, that makes a lot more sense to how you should build a city or how players should interact with NPCs and stuff like that. And so I think it was very foundational to my like DMing style even.
Campaign one is like perfect. It is like flawless,
truly flawless campaign.
It's crazy. Yeah. Like consistent for 100 episodes. You're like consistently perfect is crazy. Very cool. As a game designer yourself also, I know by day you have worked in coding at least. Has that ever, I don't know anything about coding, so maybe this is a silly
neither dumb do I question from a,
well, that's not good. This is a silly dumb question from a silly dumb man, but has that understanding of how that works, or maybe not, translated in any way to the way that you design games? Or is there a different, what's the difference between the way that you go about making game mechanics versus the way you go about writing stories?
Yeah. I mean, I think that coding has always been a very sacred, mathematical, rational, logical thing. When I was younger, it was much more creative and fluid, and I was just doing whatever I wanted. Like, I would make little prank programs. So I would leave them on my parents' desktops, and it would just say like, click me. And when you clicked on it, it would start this like terrifying cycle of like, haha, I pranked you, except there's no X button, so you can't log out. You, in order to get out of this prank program, you have to restart your computer, which is a nightmare if you think about it.
Oh my God.
Except they never clicked on it. It was just me clicking on it because I was so giddy about making them. Like, that's so silly. I would do that. I would make like little choose your own adventure games and stuff. And as I got older, when I started realizing like what people thought coding was, I was like, oh, I can take this thing that was very fun for me and make it into something that makes me money. Awesome. I'm going to do that, and I'll already be good at it. So I should definitely major in that in college. And I think as soon as I showed up to college, I was like, oh, I'm not like anybody else here. So I feel like it hasn't really influenced how I build games or anything. And I think that's also just because, like you said, I'm way less of like a technical person and way more of a jack of all trades. Like, my sister likes to describe me as like right brain and left brain, even though that's like not a, you know, biologically accurate thing. Mm-hmm. But both. I like being logical. I like thinking. I like solving these puzzles and like trying to figure out what is logic or what actually is happening in a scene. But I also really like being generative. I like coming up with ideas and letting them take these like ambiguous forms. And Code is not like that at all. I think the people that are able to move through coding with that mindset know a lot about the logical side and therefore are able to turn it creative. But for me, it kind of just like definitely made me have to take a few steps back and like find my creativity again. Mm. After I got my degree, because I was just like, I feel like I've just been thinking about computer science and programming and coding and how to make a job out of it. And I haven't even thought about like the thing that I grew up doing, which was like telling stories and making silly YouTube videos and writing scripts and writing books and all of that kind of fun stuff. Like it felt like learning to write with my hand again after like breaking my wrist or something. Like I really had to relearn everything. But I don't think that's a bad thing. I think there are tons of more technical people, like I said, that, you know, they write these like really intense systems, both coding wise and also their game systems. Like you can tell when a coder has written a game. And I feel like I can tell.
Is there a game that comes to mind?
I honestly, I'm trying to think because there's a couple of games that I've, like Mouse Ritter feels like a game that was written by a coder. I know it wasn't, but it feels like it was. Any game that uses hexes, like if you use hexes by default, you're coder coded.
You're coder coded.
Yeah, it's just like not you trying to make this more logical of a game when this is all imagination. Blows my mind.
That's so funny.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I think there's like a point, many points like that for any creative that's like kind of a break from the direction you were going that you almost weren't expecting to happen until it happens. Weirdly, an important part of the journey is kind of the repositioning that happens as you grow and learn and things like that. So
yeah.
Wow. Well, we've blown through my questions. We've blown through all of them. So, thanks so much for stopping by. This has been so fun. I am so serious. I want to play Daggerheart with you so bad.
Me too.
Or anything. So we're going to make that happen. Wow. Thanks so much for being on the show. Is there anything you want to shout out or talk about or plug on the way out?
Just my podcast. It's a Hopecore mech podcast, post-apocalypse mech podcast called Seeker Machinations. It's featuring a lot of the people that were mentioned today. So Connie Chong from Transplanar, their partners, C. Thomas, Hamna, just a bunch of people. I don't know why I'm naming people, but yeah, it's a bunch of people that are beloved in the space, people that run their own shows. And they basically bring their own, everybody is like bringing some level of culture to this show, and we're talking about mechs that are infused with godhood and these pilots that basically communicate with gods after 100 years of no conversation. It is so sick. It's a great time. What I have a great fuck? Time.
That sounds awesome.
It's awesome. Holy
shit, I can't believe I missed this in my research. I'm a terrible researcher.
It's fairly new. It's fairly new. So it's okay. You.
That makes me feel a little bit better. I'm going to dive into that immediately.
It's awesome. Wow. It's like 100 years ago, pilots were petrified by a wave sent around the world. So these pilots are stone in these mechs, and something is making these mechs come back to life. And these pilots that the players are trying to figure out what is causing the good guys to turn around on us. What's happening here? It's awesome.
Please let me play TTRPGs with you. I want to do it so bad.
I want it so bad.
Wow. Wow. Fucking Lexi McQueen, what a star. Thank you so much for being on the show. And thank you for listening. We will see you next time on Friends and Fables. Goodbye.
Bye.